Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami. Okay, so for tonight I thought I would do some bit of sutta reading from the Samyutta, which is the connected discourses of the Buddha. So this is what the Buddha actually talked about, certain teachings that he gave. And in the old days, the Buddha would walk around, give teachings to different people, and then the monks and the nuns and the lay disciples would memorize them. And then after he died, it was recorded. Was kind of first it was memorized and kind of passed along verbally, and then only I think about 500 years after he passed away, the people started to write it down. Yeah, so now it's translated into English, into these neat little volumes. And he, because he gave teachings for 45 years, they recorded in different ways. So this is one of the volumes that's recorded by topics, by chapters. Right, it's called the Samyutta, which is in chapters. And tonight, I thought I would read through the chapter on Satya Samyutta, which is the connected discourses on the truth. And Buddhism is have a different concept of truth. It's not whether, you know, there's a God or not, whether the world is eternal or not. In Buddhism, truth only has to be regarding the Four Noble Truths. And we were talking before. So it's either about suffering and the end of suffering. That's all revolves around the many different aspects of it. Yeah. Okay, so it starts out with concentration. It is teaching on concentration. Asavati, which is where the Buddha teach. Bhikkhus, develop concentration. A bhikkhu who is concentrated understands things as they really are. And what does he understand as it really is? He understands as it really is. This is suffering. He understands as it really is. This is the origin of suffering. He understands as it really is. This is the cessation of suffering. He understands as it really is. This is the way leading to the cessation of suffering. Bhikkhus, develop concentration. A bhikkhu who is concentrated understand things as they really are. Therefore, bhikkhus, monks, an exertion should be made to understand this is suffering, this is the origin of suffering, this is the cessation of suffering, and this is the way leading to the cessation of suffering. So those are the Four Noble Truths that the Buddha always talked about in different ways. The first Noble Truth is the suffering. There's stress in the world, stress in life. There's disappointments, you know, always sickness and death. Yeah, so that's, you know, the universal existential problems that all beings face, not just humans, animals, devas, or whatever. And then, so that's the first noble truth, suffering. And then the second noble truth is suffering doesn't come, you know, uncaused, doesn't come by itself. There's an origin of suffering, it comes from somewhere. Right? So there's an origin of suffering, and then, but whatever comes out also passes away. So there's also the cessation of suffering. Origin, because it comes about because of a cause. We want something. We attach to something. That's what we suffer. But we know that you attach to something, you're going to also let go. So that's always the cessation of suffering. But these, the suffering or disappointment, the stress of life, don't come by themselves or wanting to be happy. It's just the beginning of the practice. You have to establish the causes for your happiness. So there's a way of practice. Right? So Buddhism is always, you know, a training that the Buddha left behind. He became enlightened because he did a certain kind of, he trained his mind, he practiced in a certain way. So there's a path leading to the end of suffering. So it's something you have to develop. It doesn't come by itself. It's something that you have to do gradually, over many lifetimes even. Yeah. So those are the Four Noble Truths. They're called Noble Truths because when you realize these truths, you become a noble person, a noble being, something beyond the ordinary. Yeah. So that's why the Four Noble Truths, over and over again. Different traditions, they focus on different things, you know. what's this enlightenment, love, whether the, you know, the world's eternal. There's many different philosophical positions or theories that you can kind of get interested in. But in Theravada Buddhism, the Four Noble Truths is the only thing that we are kind of encouraged to think about, to reflect, to consider over and over again in different ways. Yeah, so that's kind of the our only calling. We're not so worried about whether it's, you know, there's afterlife. You know, although there are kind of Buddhist cosmology, but the Buddha's always said, you know, if there's suffering, then you just need to focus on that. If you're suffering, how to end that? Whether there's a Buddha, whether there's a God, whether there's Jesus, whether our religion lead to the same direction, it doesn't matter. If you're suffering, you're feeling anxious or whatever, how to overcome that. And that's the main thing. The other stuff, interesting, but not very important. Okay, okay, moving on. That's the one where the Buddha talked about the Four Noble Truths. The other one is there. Bhikkhus. Bhikkhus are monks. Okay? Yeah. Monks do not think evil, unwholesome thoughts, that is, sensual thought, thought of ill will, thought of harming. For what reason? These thoughts, monks, are unbeneficial, irrelevant to the fundamentals of the holy life. They do not lead to revulsion, to dispassion, to cessation, to peace, to direct knowledge, to enlightenment, to nirvana. When you think, monks, you should think, this is suffering. You should think, this is the origin of suffering. You should think, this is the cessation of suffering. You should think, this is the way leading to the cessation of suffering. For what reason? These thoughts, monks, are beneficial, relevant to the fundamentals of the holy life, and lead to revulsion, to dispassion, to cessation, to peace, to direct knowledge, to enlightenment, to nirvana. Therefore, monks, an exertion should be made to understand the Four Noble Truths. So when you think about something, instead of thinking, you know, different things, thinking about vengeful thought, thinking of getting your ways, thinking how you should improve, whatever, no, you should always reflect on the Four Noble Truths, because those bring peace, those brings understanding, brings clarity. Okay, that's another way. Okay. Talking about, like, you know, in Theravada, the concept of knowledge or wisdom is that, you know, when you know something, what do you know? You know, this kind of, whether you understand that there's aliens or not, or how many planets there are, there are other life outside of Earth, also some wonderful, interesting knowledge that we could pursue. But the Buddha points back, that's not so important. What is important to know, right? Knowledge, true knowledge. Then a certain monk approached the Blessed One, the Buddha, paid homage to him, sat to one side and said to him, Venerable Sir, it is said true knowledge, true knowledge. What is true knowledge, Venerable Sir? And in what way has one arrived at true knowledge? Well, unsurprisingly, the Buddha answers, Bhikkhu, knowledge of suffering, knowledge of the origin of suffering, knowledge of the cessation of suffering, and knowledge of the way leading to the cessation of suffering. This is called true knowledge, Bhikkhu. It is in this way that one has arrived at true knowledge. Therefore, Bhikkhu, exertion should be made to understand this is a suffering, origin of suffering, and the way leading to the cessation of suffering. So, well, obviously, this chapter is about Four Noble Truths. So it goes, you know, goes back to it over and over again, different ways, and why, how important it is to understand, to know, to work with, you know, this the thing. And sometimes you can summarize, you know, suffering and, you know, the happiness of suffering and the end of suffering. I mean, that's the existential human problems. You know, if you're suffering, in what way and how to get beyond that, whatever ways you can. And if you are a wise person, you see clearly, suffering should cease. If you're suffering, there's something you're not seeing. something you're not understanding, something you're attaching on, something you want, but you're not getting. So if you drop the wanting, then you're at peace. And it's Buddhist concept, you know, we get reborn over and over again, right? And if we get reborn, it's only when you become fully enlightened, then you don't get reborn. You cease, finally. And so what Buddha talks about, why does human, you know, why does beings get reborn? You become an animal, you become a ghost or heavenly, you know, being. But you go through this cycle of rebirth over and over again because you don't see clearly, you haven't become enlightened. Okay, so this is, on one occasion, the Blessed One was dwelling among the Vajjans at the Kotigama. There the Blessed One addressed the bhikkhus thus, "Bhikkhus, it is because of not understanding and not penetrating the Four Noble Truths that you and I have roamed and wandered through this long course of samsara. What for? It is, bhikkhus, because of not understanding and not penetrating the Noble Truth of suffering that you and I have roamed and wandered through this long course of samsara. It is because of not understanding, not penetrating the noble truth of the origin of suffering, the noble truth of cessation of suffering, and the way leading to the cessation of suffering, that beings get reborn over and over again. We're here. We get reborn in this lifetime. Usually it is because there's a lesson to be learned. There's something that we haven't understood. And that's why we come back over and over again. So each successive lifetime, you would think that you hopefully continue the path of practice. You know, you pass the lesson somehow, and then you get reborn less and less. So the more you want, the more you get, you come back. And the less you want, slowly the wanting gets to be lessened, and then you don't get reborn finally. The same, knowledge, understanding, the only thing to understand, the only thing to know is the Four Noble Truths. Bhikkhus, those ascetics, those practitioners, meditators, or Brahmins, who do not understand as it really is, this is suffering. Who do not understand as it really is, this is the origin of suffering. Who do not understand as it really is, this is the cessation of suffering. These are not considered to be ascetics among ascetics, Brahmins among Brahmins. And these venerable ones do not, by realizing for themselves through direct knowledge, enter and dwell in this very life, the goal of asceticism and the goal of Brahmanhood. So the goal of the holy life is to penetrate through these Four Noble Truths, not to do anything else. Not to, you know, there's other things you can do, to learn, to study, to perform acts of goodness. But the most important thing is to penetrate, to understand, to know for yourself these Four Noble Truths. Basically understand suffering and to transcend that in different ways. And that's how they say the Buddha himself, that's how he became the Buddha, because he understand and penetrate the Four Noble Truths. Blah, blah, blah. And say if any Buddhists in the future, any enlightened beings in the future, in the present, in the past, they become enlightened because they penetrate, understand the Four Noble Truths. So there's different ways of looking at it and why it's so important. Wanted to understand. Also, you can bring into the daily life, you know, of the Four Noble Truths that you can see in our daily lives. You know, being things that you don't like, that's suffering. Not getting what you want, that's suffering. So the next time is, you know, you get into an argument with somebody, instead of thinking, oh, you know, so and so, this happened. Why don't I do this? Why, you know, terrible? Why don't I get what I want? You just think, okay, yeah, this is part of life. This is what happens when you live in life. You come up with disagreements with your loved ones. You get into arguments, you get into fights with your loved ones. That's just normal. It's not something that you've done wrong or something the other person done wrong. It's just part of life that we get into these kind of stressful situations from time to time. And it's just part of it. And it's just a lot of times this to acceptance, then life doesn't seem so difficult. We accept and we flow along and we try to learn from it. Life isn't a major problem. But then again, easier said than done, especially when you're in the middle of it. he said, Asavati bhikkhus, wherever arahants, perfectly enlightened beings, in the past, fully awakened to things as they really are, all fully awakened to the Four Noble Truths as they really are. Whatever arahants, perfectly enlightened ones, in the future, will fully awaken to things as they really are. All will fully awaken to the Four Noble Truths as they really are. And whatever arahants, perfectly enlightened ones, at present, have fully awakened to things as they really are. All have fully awakened to the Four Noble Truths as they really are. What four? Noble Truths of suffering, origin of suffering, cessation of suffering, the way leading to cessation of suffering. The way leading the path, sometimes it's described as the Eightfold Path. So it's also, you know, kind of, you start out with harmlessness, you know, living an ethical life, not harming yourself, not harming others. And then stillness, which is practicing meditation, and then using that stillness to penetrate into, to gain wisdom into reality. Yeah, so that's called the path leading to the cessation of suffering. Something you have to develop, something you have to cultivate. And that's why people meditate, that's why people perform good acts of goodness. That's why people, you know, learn to calm their mind. That's why people reflect on, you know, different things to cultivate this wisdom aspect. Yeah, and it's a practice. That's why Buddhists are always going to talk about practice. How's your practice going? What do you do? You know, what kind of practice are you doing? Yeah. So just learning to, you know, see clearly into your nature reality. Learn to see clearly into your own kind of ways you behave. Okay, this is another interesting thing what the Buddha talks about, you know, kind of these teaching as well. On one occasion, the Blessed One was dwelling at Kosambi in the Singsapa Grove. Then the Blessed One took a few Singsapa leaves in his hands and addressed the bhikkhus thus, "What do you think, bhikkhus? Which is more numerous, these few leaves I have taken up in my hand, or those in the grove overhead?" Obviously, in the forest, it's millions and millions and millions of leaves. You only have a few in his hands, right? "Venerable Sir, the leaves that the Blessed One has taken up in his hands are few, but those in the grove overhead are numerous. So too, bhikkhus, the things I have directly known but have not taught you are numerous, while the things I have taught you are few. And why, bhikkhus, have I not taught those many things? Because they are unbeneficial, irrelevant to the fundamentals of the holy life. They do not lead to revulsion, to dispassion, to cessation, to peace, to direct knowledge, to enlightenment, to nirvana. Therefore, I have not taught them. And what, bhikkhus, have I taught? I have taught this is suffering. I have taught this is the origin of suffering. I have taught this is the cessation of suffering. I have taught this is the way leading to the cessation of suffering. And why, bhikkhus, have I taught this? Because this is beneficial, relevant to the fundamentals of the holy life, and leads to revulsion, to dispassion, to cessation, to peace, to direct knowledge, to enlightenment, to nirvana. Therefore, I have taught this. Therefore, bhikkhus, an assertion should be made to understand this is suffering." Blah, 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 blah. A lot of times, obviously, reading the sutta, there's a lot of repetition, because that's how it was memorized in the ancient Indian society. You know, when you memorize things, it's lots of repetition, makes it easier to remember, right? So like I said, you know, when Buddha became fully enlightened, many things he knows, understands, and sees, but he doesn't talk about them. He only talks about what's important. And the thing is, you know, leading to peace, to wisdom, that's the most important thing. Everything else is kind of interesting, but not beneficial, not important. And that's not sometimes even the holy life. You can get distracted in different ways, learning different texts and philosophical positions and interesting things. But the thing that Buddha always pointed back to is, you know, to your own kind of condition. Are you suffering? And how do you solve that? So anything to worry about. You know, are you suffering your day to day? What is it that annoys you? What is it that makes you anxious? What is it that makes you uncomfortable? And how to foster a sense of ease? How to foster a sense of well-being in yourself? Yeah, different ways to look at it. You can talk about, you know, suffering, or you can talk about happiness. How can I increase my happiness? How can I establish the causes of bringing a sense of well-being, a sense of harmony within yourself and others around you? Okay, so this is how important he thinks it is, so what trade-up we can do. 100 spheres, bhikkhus. But suppose there's a man, right, with a lifespan of 100 years, who could live 100 years. Someone would say to him, "Come, good man, in the morning they will strike you with 100 spheres. At noon they will strike you with 100 spheres. In the evening they will strike you with 100 spheres. And you, good man, being struck day after day by 300 spheres, will have a lifespan of 100 years, will live 100 years. And then after 100 years have passed, you have made the breakthrough to the Four Noble Truths, to which you had not broken through earlier. It is fitting, bhikkhus, for a clansman intent on his good to accept the offer. For what reason? Because this samsara is without discovery beginning. A first point cannot be discerned. I do not say that a breakthrough to the Four Noble Truths is accompanied by suffering or displeasure. Rather, the breakthrough to the Four Noble Truths is accompanied only by happiness and joy. What for? The noble truth of suffering and the way leading to cessation of suffering. Therefore, bhikkhus, an exertion should be made to understand this is suffering, it's the end of suffering. So he said, if someone were to beat you 300 times every day for 100 years, even that is worthwhile if at the end of that you break through, make a breakthrough to understand the Four Noble Truths. Because like I said, you know, when you understand that, then you kind of lessen so much suffering in your own life. Yeah. So that's even worth it, you know, to kind of go through that kind of hardship. Yeah, it's just obviously pointing to the importance of understanding the Four Noble Truths and how's that place, you know, into our practice. Any questions or comments?
When our suffering comes from seeing others suffering.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's not about your own craving or aversion, but it's about your suffering because of suffering of others.
But, okay, that suffering comes in many different guises, different forms. Obviously, the obvious one is craving and attachment. But also, seeing other people suffering, there's a subtle attachment, thinking or some kind of wrong view. Thinking, you know, life shouldn't be this way. Why is there so much suffering? So after a while, as you practice, there should be a cultivation of, you know, understand the causes of things. That some people or in the world, it's just part of it's just, yeah, there's just involves a lot of injustice, a lot of suffering. Life is not always fair. Innocent kids, you know, get hurt and abused and get sickness in different ways that they haven't really done anything. They can get, you know, born with a life-threatening disease and have to kind of endure lots of physical illness all throughout their life. And you will think, you know, what have they done wrong to deserve this? But that's just the nature of life on earth. It's not perfect. And things, you know, bad things happen to good people. And that's just the nature of that. So you, as a practitioner, you help where you can. But you also don't get carried away by the negativity of the world. Yeah, because when you get carried away, then you feel sad. You feel, you know, dark, and you get depressed. And when that happens, then you're not, it doesn't bring a brightness to the mind. And you can't help people, things around you when you get caught up in their own suffering. Yeah, so there's a bit of a balance of, you know, being able to empathize, to understand people's suffering, but then not get carried along with it too much. That way, you know, even, and sometimes it's hard, especially with your loved ones. You know, when they do well, you feel happy. And they get sick, or they feel, when they suffer, you start to suffer along with it. And then that's where you kind of have to kind of draw the line, that it's good to kind of, you know, empathize and feel the happiness of others, but not to get carried away too much of the ups and downs of life. You know, that's just, you know, it's natural. It's just the nature of life that, you know, sometimes you get things, sometimes you lose things. Sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. Sometimes life goes, you know, things come together very, you know, very well, and it's beautiful. And then other things, life just falls apart according to different things that comes up. So sometimes just kind of
you know, stepping back and just understanding that these things, you know, it's natural, it's nature. It follows its own cause and effect. Everything is conditioned, but you don't, you know, your willpower and your ability to affect the world around you is very tiny. Sometimes we overestimate our influence. You think, you know, if it's your kid, they should all turn out well because you're trying to do the best you can. But, you know, they do what they want to do. They have other conditioning that comes along. They have their own karmic inclination, their own personality that comes out. And you can only do so much. So after a while, you can trust and understand, yeah, you know, a lot of things, are life is out of control. Your body, you think, you know, is in your control, but a lot of it isn't. As you get over it, things just fall apart differently. Even though you try to take care of it, exercise and, you know, eat good food and have good diet or whatever, things still fall apart. You still have, you know, sick from time. You still get sick from time to time. Yeah, so it's kind of understanding or accepting, understand the world around you, how much, you know, little control you have, brings this peace because you're kind of trying to flow along, do the best you can. But you don't try to overly manage the world around you because it can be. It's unmanageable. Your mind is unmanageable. Sometimes you have very kind of negative emotions that comes up. Feeling of anger, irritation, vengefulness from people that you're supposed to love, your loved ones. Why do I feel so angry? Why do I feel so terrible? You know, angry when, you know, against your mother, or your father, or your kids, or whatever. You think, oh, I shouldn't have these kind of feelings. Well, yeah, they come and they go. Your emotions are not under your control at all times. And these things come, and just, you know, sometimes just kind of just taking a step back and just look at it instead of reacting or, you know, attaching, feeling, you know, guilty over having these thoughts or emotions. It's just, yeah, these things come up. Yeah, just to be aware of it. And that's why, you know, and that's sometimes people do become more sensitive and they become overly sensitive. They can't read the newspaper because there's just too much injustice, too much violence in the world. But I think with wisdom, you know, you can be at peace at anywhere. Because you understand, yeah, you know, there is always violence. There is, you know, ignorance. People have their own attachment and they have greed and have a lot of desire. Some people will just do anything just to get what they want. And it's no point saying it's wrong. Yeah, it is wrong, but, you know, people are people. They're not going to change anytime soon. So your job as practitioner is just to make peace with the way, with the people around you, make peace with the world around you as best as you can. Establish an inner peace inside. Yeah, not to try to make the world perfect outside. You do what you can, but you understand that things will always, you know, always fall apart. There's always, the environment is always, you know, you do what you can, but the environment is, you know, changes by itself sometimes. Or other people make, you know, have a bigger impact than you like them, sometimes negatively, but that's just the way it is. Yeah. So not to get between, you're not to get too cynical and not to get apathetic, not really get involved, but then not to be overly depressed when things don't, you know, go the way that you think they should. Yeah. Questions or comments? So this is just a introduction. Next week, we'll talk about what, in more detail, what is the Four Noble Truths and why it's so important to understand, to reflect, and to use it for your, you know, to incorporate into your practice. Use it the way, obviously, that will lead to your enlightenment, your own happiness. Because like I said, you know, all arahants are the Buddhas of the past, present, and future. They became that way because they understood, they penetrated through the Four Noble Truths. Yeah, so in the Zen tradition, there's a koan, you know, kind of a saying, you know, what is the sound of one hand clapping? Well, that means. Or, you know, what is your face of your grandfather, before your grandfather or something, you know, what is your original face? They have all these kind of very kind of mystical puzzles that you also help you point towards enlightenment. But in the Theravada, like I said, we're kind of very plain, vanilla, down to earth. It's just, you know, suffering and the end of suffering. And that's all, it always revolves around that. It's not about, you know, whether there's space aliens, maybe there is. Maybe there's another planet on earth, that there's life in a different planet. Interesting. But not so important in this practice. You know, How can you achieve more peace? How can you, you know, increase a sense of well-being and happiness? In short, how can you transcend suffering? And that's the only thing that comes back to it over and over again. Whatever it is that you're working with, whatever issues that come in your life, you know, how can you lessen your suffering in different ways? And it's not always so, you know, kind of straightforward. Each of us, you know, encounters suffering in different ways, relate to suffering in different ways. So we need to solve it in ways that, you know, that take into account your own strengths and weaknesses. And different people solve suffering in different ways. So you have to work out, you know, what's the best way for you to proceed, what's the best way to kind of solve your own issues that you face from time to time. Resolve an issue. Different ways. Like sometimes, you know, suffering comes from having a view or an expectation. So recently, this week, sometimes you get disappointed. Someone makes a promise and they don't keep. So you think, oh, why so and so made a promise? Why didn't they keep the promise? Of course not. Things change. They change their mind. Things happen. So you're like, yeah, okay, yeah, this is what happened. So your initial reaction is like, yeah, okay, you know, it's not very nice. But then on second look, yeah, this is what happens. People do what they want to do. They don't do what you think they should do. Never mind. You know, do the best of it. And sometimes you think, oh, it might be a terrible loss, but you never know. Different things might show up. Different things might happen. Yeah. So you kind of, yeah, so you drop your expectation and yeah, it's not a problem. Different things come and go. Yeah, so you see, okay, yeah, you know, this is the nature of, you know, like I said, as an abbot, you try to arrange things to make things come together. But sometimes things don't come together. Things just, different things come up. You know, people change their mind. People, you know, stay longer than they should or leave before they should. Yeah, this is just the nature of kind of life in terms of my own personal experience.
So you think this business of solving suffering is like a bit by bit thing. So, there's a bit of suffering, solve that.
That's fine.
Here's another bit of suffering, solve that.
A little bit.
It's not like a fell swoop
thing. Well, they come together and they happen different times, but yeah, you certainly can chop bits and pieces of it in the day-to-day life. That it comes up, you know, kind of experientially for you, different ways, you can chop bits of it. But then at times, there are big chunks of it that you can wipe out. If, you know, right views, you know, becomes concentrated. That's right. Chop bits and pieces, little bits, and also understanding that life, you chop one bit, next week, tomorrow, some other bits come up. Yeah. That's just part of, you know, kind of growing, practicing. Yeah.
The end of suffering always sounds like messy.
No. You can experience bits of it. It is the big breakthrough is massive, but certainly they don't happen. You know, you have bits of it, like, you know, this afternoon. Okay, you might probably not polite, but anyway, you know, go to the toilet. You have this like big streak down the toilet. I'm like, why? Who leaves a dirty toilet? Why? You know, why don't people just use the scrubber? So I think, of course. You know, yeah. Normally you would think, yeah, people would be, you know, using, have mindfulness. You're in the monastery, everyone's practicing mindfulness. Well, then they clean after themselves. But no, of course not. It's just the way it is. Some people aren't so mindful. Never mind. Yeah, so this idea of, you know, why don't people more mindful? Well, it is, yeah. People are somewhat more mindful than others. Never mind. Yeah, so things like that. Yeah, just, okay, yeah. Isn't it a problem?
It was the girls' toilets, right?
No, it's a monk's toilet. They're supposed to be specialists. They're supposed to be in training. They're supposed to be very so mindful, know what they're doing. Yeah, so that's what I mean. Just little things and communal things that is meant to kind of, you know, we live close enough to each other to rub each other, but also enough that you can use these kind of interaction. That's the way of practice. Sometimes, that's why in our tradition, we do a lot of communal stuff. other tradition, you go off in the forest by yourself. And I think sometimes it's easy to be very peaceful when you're not living with anybody else and you do whatever you want. It's very easy. But it's always when you come to contact and you have different views and opinion, different ways of looking things, different doing things. Then you can see how much kind of attachment things you have inside. Yes, sometimes monks, they meditate by themselves and they say, oh, I'm enlightened, and it certainly feels that way, very quiet, meditation very bright. That way, but no one's really rubbing you. No one's saying something, yeah, you're an idiot. Or, why don't you do things a different way? Then you realize the first person calls you stupid. You realize how enlightened you are. First person calls you fat. Then you realize how enlightened you are, whatever, skinny or ugly and old, whatever. And you realize how enlightened you are. But the trees don't talk back, the animals don't talk back, so it's great to be in the forest. And you feel very enlightened until something happens. So you don't get your way. Yeah, and it's true. And so it is the day-to-day kind of rubbing. And the Buddha talks about that. Like you rub a little bit away. It's like you have a handle. Each day you rub a little bit away. Then one day that little axe breaks. Axe is your attachment to things. But you don't know when. All you know is every day you're rubbing a little bit, rubbing things away a little bit, everything you're wearing away a little bit. The big moment, the end of suffering may come, and then you know. But every day you can work a little bit. Every day you can see, where is it that you're suffering? Yeah. So in the monastery life, there's plenty of different things that come up, as you know. Yeah. Especially in the kitchen. Go near when you're in the kitchen, you'll see. But different bits and pieces that comes up. But like I said, it's not necessarily a bad thing that these things allow you to work through your attachment, your views, your opinions, your expectations of others. And like I said, you suffer long enough that things, go so horribly wrong. There's always a fallback position. There's always an escape hatch. When everything goes wrong, what's the thing to do? Everything goes wrong in your life, husband leaves you, you still don't get a job, your roommate throws you out, steps out the door, you're so nice, they throw you out anyway. Huh? Not quite, there's still plenty of suffering in the monastery, I guarantee you, there's plenty of suffering in the monastery. That's right. Now, when all else fails, what to do? Lower your expectation. Life isn't perfect. Bad things happen, even to good people, even to Buddhists, even to practitioners, even to meditators. Evil, terrible thoughts. You try to be really nice, but sometimes you have evil thoughts. You want to strangle people. Never mind. That's just what happens. Yeah, just lower expectation, Don't want so much in the world. Don't want so much from people. People the way they are. They don't have to be perfect for you to live them. You don't have to like people to be nice to people. Really. Yeah, you can always be nice, be gentle. You can always accept things for the way they are. Or make an effort to accept. I mean, it's not perfect, But also accept where you are. You're going to accept where you are. At this moment, I'm really pissed off. That's fine. That's fine to be pissed off. You don't have to be calm and collected. But you're working with it. You're acknowledging. Yeah, so sometimes people think, I'm a practitioner. I should be happy and loving all the time. I should be peaceful. It's a nice idea. But sometimes it's not real. Yeah, so it's always, this ability to be honest with yourself, to admit, know where you're at. It's only when you know where you're at that you can work towards something. Yeah. If you kind of, pretend you're somewhere else and you're not, then you're not really there. You're not in the present moment. You're not in the present moment. How can you feel or do anything? There's always some position of, I should be somewhere else. And sometimes it can be quite stressful. I should be this, I should be that, and I should be more calm and clear, I should be more loving, I should be more whatever. But no, things are the way you are. You are the way you are. They are the way they are. So you can accept you the way you are, you can accept others. You can't accept yourself, it's the same mind, you can't accept others. Yeah, so that's why sometimes it's kind of a mirror of how we react to others, also how we treat ourselves. But it's just kind of this day in, day out, rubbing away, working, different things that come up in the mind. And from a place of acceptance, a place of learning, place of, kind of getting to know yourself and others around. Like, that's interesting. When this so-and-so does something, it provoke something. Like, interesting, I didn't think I feel so strongly about certain things. Oh, interesting. Instead of being guilty or reactive to it, try to learn from it. Why does this happen? There's a cause for it. Why do people act the way they are? There's a cause. You think, oh, that's silly. Why, you know, there should be this. There should be that. Well, they aren't doing that. They're doing something else. Oh, interesting. I wonder what they're seeing this. Because in the world, everybody thinks they're right. Everything is they're the best thing, know how to work the world. But everybody has a different ways of viewing the world, of making our place in it. And our job is, you know, once we kind of have a bit more clarity, we can look around us and try to understand the people around us. Because sometimes, you know, it's true, we all live in our own little bubble, our own little world sometimes. And as a practitioner, we're trying to understand, look around, understand, you know, a little bit of people around us. What makes them happy? What makes them anxious, worry? And then if you understand that, then hopefully you try to steer away from things that make people more anxious. You steer towards things that make people feel more safe, a sense of well-being. Try to increase that awareness as best as you can. But knowing, you know, everybody has their own issues and they will suffer according to their own views and opinions. And that's fine. But hopefully we're kind of lessening the suffering around us. When you lessen your own suffering, you look around, you lessen other people's suffering around you as much as you can. But you can, only people can lessen their own suffering really ultimately. Understanding that, you allow people to develop at their own pace. Some people are just a very kind of quick, sharp, and just not really into suffering. And some people really like suffering. They love suffering. They're always suffering over something. Every time you see them, they're suffering over something. Something's wrong in their life. This is not right. That's not right. This and that, the other stuff. That's fine. That's fine. That, they have the right to have suffering. Never mind. You don't try to solve. You don't try to tell them what you're doing all wrong. Yeah, that's fine. You're suffering when you feel it's appropriate. And you'll release it when you feel it's appropriate as well. So with wisdom, like the Buddha, wisdom, like the Arhat, they're very, you can tell these people are comfortable. They're in their own skin. They're comfortable in their own selves. They don't suffer too much. Whatever happens, they're always peaceful, very kind, very gentle. And that's the amazing thing about, you know, kind of reading about the Buddha's life, or, you know, reading about the life of all these kind of saintly people. They're just, you know, at ease, at peace, wherever they are, in whatever situation. Even when they meet with suffering or meet with difficulties, they're at peace. Because they have wisdom, they have clarity, and nothing shakes them. Okay, so that is a bit of introduction on the Four Noble Truths. And why is it so important to understand the Four Noble Truths? Like it boils down to happiness and suffering, increasing a sense of well-being. Really? Yeah. So that's little talk on the Four Noble Truths. Yeah, and hopefully you use that in your day-to-day to rub away your own issues and sufferings for your own welfare and happiness, also the welfare and happiness of all the people that you come into contact with, and all beings that we come into contact with as well. So I'll leave that for your reflection tonight.
Sangha Namah.